Join the Sustainers Circle and help keep KPFK's important, independent voices on your public airwaves. That's kpfk.org. Please sign up now. And thanks.
You're listening to KPFK, 90.7 FM, Los Angeles, and streaming across the globe at kpfk.org. Radio powered by the people.
You know, I mean, this is his future that we're trying to protect and save. I mean, first of all, I certainly don't want him to get drafted into a war in Iran. And he's 18 years old. He's the age. He's in college, but like he feels like he has no hope for his future. You know, whether or not there will even be jobs for him when he gets to that point. And plus, my son is mixed, too. And the racism is just, you know, at an all time high right now. And I'm always terrified every time he walks out the door, gets in the car and drives down the street. I'm afraid he might get
pulled over and shot. Good memories are forever, said the dog on the tombstone. If you're living underneath the bridge, man, all roads lead to home. I got a hidden flask, I'm paid in cash, got a cross above my bed. You know, I hitchhiked from Chicago, and a man walked up and said, "This is a union town, all down."
Good morning, and welcome to another working week. This is KPFK's Working Voices, and this is Working Voices associate producer Hal Lohr sitting in for Joe Ayala. And in this morning's show, Steve Zeltzer's Labor Media takes us to the streets of San Francisco to hear what people were saying at the No Kings rally. Then, Working Voices executive producer Dan McCrory goes to the streets here for commentary from No Kings Los Angeles. Kristen Parker has the latest news from UTLA's pending strike. And later in the show, I'll have the latest labor and economic news in this morning's Working Voices update. All this and more coming up this morning on KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles. This is Working Voices. In our first offering this morning, Steve Zeltzer from his Labor Video YouTube channel speaks with working San Franciscans at last week's No Kings rally.
James.
Why are you for a general strike?
Because of capitalism. Because of Trump. So this group started pretty recently, like several years ago. The main reason we're doing a general strike is because of everything happening, the imperialism, the capitalism, the U.S. hegemony across the world.
And how is it going to happen? What are you doing on May Day? Is that when it's going to happen?
That's
when the general strike happens.
So there is no deadline for it. Right now, the main three goals is to get people aware of the group, for you to sign the strike card so that we have a quota of when to start it. And the goal is to have 3.5% of the population to get committed to the strike. And the third goal is to create a mutual aid network so that general strike is possible. So the main issue that most people have with general strikes is that I need money, I need to survive, how am I going to pay rent, that kind of thing. This is a group that's national. There's chapters across the United States.
I'm Ollie. I am a member of DSA SF. I'm here today to kind of, you know, provide people an opportunity to get organized after they've been mobilized. You know, people have a lot of anger, but they don't always have a lot of understanding and political clarity. And I think that we need to create collective spaces for that. And so that's why I'm out here today.
And we have a billionaire mayor, Lurie. What do you think about what he's been doing, attacking people in the Tenderloin and budget cuts and of all kinds of organs?
I'm very upset. I've confronted Mayor Lurie directly in the street every time I've seen him. Me and my children were formerly homeless here in the city, and so I recognize that he is not approaching these people with care and concern. He is dehumanizing the homeless population. He is taking away all of the safety that they have through things like the RV ban, which primarily protects homeless people who are elderly individuals or parents and children with families. So, yeah, I think our mayor is really deranged and demented, and he needs
a lot of billionaires.
Yeah, he has no concept of an ordinary human and the struggles that they go through every month, every day, every second for people who are homeless. And
what is the solution?
The solution is proper funding for social services. We don't need millions and millions of dollars to police if we funded social programs that kept people out of poverty and crime. Poverty is not a crime, and we need to protect people. We need to keep them safe and indoors and access to medical care.
My name is Edward Hasbrook, and among other things, I'm a member of the National Writers Union, which has been committed as an anti-fascist union to this long-term struggle, without which none of the other shorter-term things that we try to do to advocate for our workers' rights are going to matter under a fascist regime that doesn't care what the law says are rights and doesn't respect rights. So,
and what should the labor movement do about what's going on? Because he took away bargaining rights for 700,000 federal workers. Project 2025 is a union-busting project, fascist project. What do you think the labor movement should do about this?
I think it's a difficult choice. I think we have to balance that anti-fascist work to bring about structural change and the agitation over the lives of people who are being impacted now by these changes, by this regime. How to balance that is a tricky one. I don't have a magic answer.
AI is being used by these billionaires, Musk and others. What is their goal with the use of AI?
Well, I'm here with people who are trying to get the California state pension funds, which have misinvested billions of dollars in teachers and public employees' retirement savings in Tesla stock, to sell Tesla. And this is really, in some ways, it should be an easy campaign because it's a case where the morality and the finances are aligned. I mean, Tesla is not only an evil company run by a fascist, but it's also a really bad investment. You know, Musk pivots every year from one broken promise or failed technology to another. You know, next year, he's going to make electric cars. Well, it doesn't matter if my electric cars suck because now I'm going to make robots. Well, I don't know about that. Now I'm going to be an AI company. All of those are dedicated to concentrating more power and the wealth in the hands of fewer and fewer people. The goal of AI, as people like Musk see it, is to replace workers with robots and to gain more power over those workers because they'll just be interchangeable parts and not people whose knowledge and whose skill is used and respected.
These protests planned across the country and the third that Arlington has taken part in, I'll tell you, some of the same issues rise.
My name is Joshua. I'm a tech worker. I've been working in tech for about 15 years, and I'm an organizer with the Tech Workers Coalition here in San Francisco in the Bay Area.
And this is a National Day of Action. What does this have to do with tech workers?
Yeah, I mean, I think that many tech workers, like members of our community all over the country and here in the Bay, are very upset, are very angry about the things that are happening in our country right now, the actions that our government are taking, and even just our own working conditions. I think, in tech, we've seen working conditions deteriorate, workers having less control, less say about how work is being used, how work is being organized, things like that. And we believe that if folks are here in a day of action, wanting to take more action to move our country in a direction that they believe in, that getting organized with your coworkers, that getting involved in the labor movement, that tech workers joining with other workers across industries to participate in the wider labor movement to move our country in the direction that we want, to move our work in the direction and our communities in the direction that we want, is an important thing for us to be doing.
And do you think these tech billionaires, Elon Musk and others, are using AI to get rid of workers, to intimidate workers and marginalize them?
I think that the billionaires and the owners of our companies are certainly telling the workers that that's what they're doing, and certainly we are seeing increase in layoffs in the last couple of years, and increase in AI being used as a justification to move workers around, to surveil our work more, and to make workers more afraid in many cases of retaliation, of losing their jobs, things like that, and that being used as a way to someone's workplace is supporting military contracts, is doing things with the product that the workers don't agree with, that they're more afraid that AI is going to be used as a reason for layoffs. And
And are you worried about fascism in this country?
I would say certainly I'm worried about the rise of authoritarianism, the rise of surveillance and kind of tamp down on community organizing, on worker organizing, on all these things. And, even just in the workplace organizing that we're doing, seeing like the weakening of the National Labor Relations Board.
They want to eliminate it. Project 2025.
And making it less effective, again, as a way to weaken the labor movement, to weaken unions and things like this. Whether you call it fascism, you call it something else, I think all those things are extremely concerning. And certainly that's a big part of the reason why I'm out here today.
And there's a movement for May Day, general strike on May Day. What do you think about that idea?
Yeah, I mean, I think that we're definitely going to be, the Tech Workers Coalition, we're definitely going to be mobilizing our members on May Day, whether it's people striking, people taking other kinds of action. I think, we believe that May Day is an extremely important holiday, an extremely important day for workers to be taking action together, to be in solidarity in the streets, and we're big supporters of that.
And one of the issues is AI, using AI in war, warfare, getting rid of soldiers, having AI decide targets. What is that all about, and what does that mean for people in this country?
Yeah, I think that, we are seeing that increase, as you said, in AI being used in warfare. I think we're seeing that in Iran right now with how targets are being selected. I think we saw that in the genocide in Gaza, where it really accelerated the rate in which bombs could be dropped and probably caused an increase in civilian casualties and things like that. And, for me here as a community member in the Bay Area, I also know that those are, my tax dollars or, lack of taxation that's going to fund those bombs.
It seems it's unlimited, the amount of
money. Yeah, really an unlimited amount of funds that they're willing to do that. I think similarly in many of the companies, that seemingly unlimited amount of money that's being used to build these data centers that are often being kind of used for this stuff. Those data centers are also, causing a lot of problems in our communities, environmental impacts, health impacts, all these kinds of things. So I think all of that is very connected, and I deeply believe that, workers or, there's many forms of action that people can take. I think political action, community action, all this stuff is really important, and I believe that, workers getting organized, particularly in some of these tech companies and really just, across industries, is one of the biggest ways that we're going to be able to push back against and, stop.
They have power in these companies, the workers.
Absolutely. Yeah, the tech companies have a huge amount of power, and I think that means that the workers in those companies today still have a huge amount of power if they can get organized and push back against their bosses and improve our working conditions, be more proud of how the work that we're doing is being used, and, certainly that's a lot of what gets me coming out and coming to events like this.
My name is Faith. I'm here as a part of DSA. We're here to spread the word about all sorts of organizing. You want to pan your camera real quick? We have organizing in your workplace, and we have organizing in your neighborhood.
What's your position on the general strike movement for May 1st?
It's definitely something that we are working alongside, though we are not working for it openly, just because we want to keep our options open. But if a general strike may come, that's great news. I think it's great that we have workers here showing that they can organize and that they're not just cogs in a machine.
My name is Ruth Rudetsky. I am an educator. I'm a member of CalSTRS. I'm the daughter of a Holocaust survivor. And Elon Musk is trying to destroy democracy in the United States. He bought Twitter as a platform to help him do that. He bought Twitter using the wealth he in Tesla, and we want to take down Tesla. I want my pension fund, CalSTRS, which has $2 billion of Tesla stock, to sell that. It does not represent the values that California educators work for, and it's a piss-poor investment. I want them to sell it before it goes Enron, even aside from the politics. But it is the politics that motivate me. CalPERS, which represents California public employees, has another $2 billion of Tesla stock. We started working on CalSTRS. People kept asking us, what about CalPERS? We looked and found that CalPERS had just a little bit more Tesla stock than CalSTRS. It does not represent the values that California's public servants spend their lives working for. We don't want it in our retirement pension.
Are you worried about fascism in this country? I mean, it seems like these people like Musk are kind of running the government.
Well, when the other sign says Musk is a fascist, and we always get lots of compliments when we carry it.
What do you think is going to defeat this fascist movement? Because Trump is probably not going to go peacefully. I mean, he wants to have martial law to prevent an election. Are you concerned that there may be martial law and a military takeover?
I'm terrified of it. That's why I'm out here today. I think that this is... I'm not fighting on the most important front. There are a lot of different fronts to fight this on, and this is not the only front I am working on, but we're a very small core group that's working on this divestment effort, and so that's why I'm here today. With that, every bit helps.
And are the unions, is the California Teachers Association, California Federation of Teachers supporting this effort?
Individual members are, yes, but the folks working on this are retired folks. We're not in the unions anymore, and so it's been hard to get the unions.
Why wouldn't they want to sell Tesla stock?
It's been hard to get support from the unions, partly because, well, my former union has been very involved in a strike until a week ago. There are other things that are arguably at least as important or more important for the unions to be working on, protecting our students from ICE, for example. That's one of my other hats. Okay? So I understand why they haven't picked it up, but I do find it frustrating.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Good.
Yeah, my name's David. I'm a union member, healthcare worker, physical therapist at Kaiser, and I'm part of UNAC UACP. We went on a 4-week, 28-day strike because Kaiser stalled and ghosted us on the table. So the strike was super important and super effective because they got the back on the table. And we fought for fair wages, patient safety, and proper staffing. And I think it's a good win for all the new people joining our union as well. Could have gone better, but we got as good of a contract, as powerful as we are.
And I understand Kaiser spent $1 billion for replacement workers. Why are they spending that money to replace workers when they could have provided that to staff, to the patients for better care?
That is correct. The 4-week strike, they spent about $1.5 billion to replace the healthcare workers when they could have invested in us. Because I think overall, you know, they didn't want to give us what we wanted. They didn't want to give us that power. I think in the long term, it would have cost them more, but short term, they would have saved more money. And I think they want to set a precedent for future healthcare hospitals and companies they buy to make sure the new workers they buy out don't unionize, because ultimately, yeah, that would share some of the wealth that we create, and they don't want that. They
it's
want
a to keep union busting tactic, in other words.
100% all union busting tactic. They got probably a lot of the expensive union busting lawyers on their side telling them what to do, and but you know, we try our best. We're going to keep organized. We're going to fight for the next contract, next 4 years, and we're going to fight it till the end, and we're making sure it's going to be fair, and then they don't keep taking advantage of us.
And what would single payer mean to you as a healthcare worker?
Yeah, I'm on for single payer. I think everyone, Americans and humans, should have free healthcare, and I'm for that legislation. So even as a UNEC member, I support CNA's effort to be single payer. And whatever comes out of it, I'm all for it.
I mean, when healthcare workers have to fight for healthcare themselves,
exactly.
What is that a statement?
Exactly, and we're still fighting for it. And, you know, I think, you know, they're still trying to reduce our healthcare benefits as healthcare workers. So, you know, we've got to keep fighting, got to keep organizing.
Yeah. I'm Calixa. I'm a volunteer with the Peace and Freedom Party and Vote Socialist California. And we're running 5 candidates for different state offices. They're all socialist candidates running on the platform to tax the billionaires in order to fund healthcare, education, and housing. And they're running on the Peace and Freedom Party platform. So the Peace and Freedom Party is an independent working class party. It's been around since the 60s. It was actually born out of the anti-war movement and in partnership with the Black Panthers. So it has some Bay Area history. But yeah, we're trying to get these folks on the ballot because, you know, we've seen the two-party system fail us, and we need to start building something of our own.
And both support parties are supporting the war.
Exactly.
Fund the war. Both parties are giving funding to ICE and other.
Yeah, exactly. Our candidates are strictly anti-war, want to divest from Israel, want to stop deportations too. That's like a big place that our money is going, you know, just to like the military, to ICE, and they're much better uses for that.
And a lot of people are fed up with the Democrats, even though they're against Trump. 25% people support the Democrats. Why are people so disenchanted by the Democrats?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think the Democrats have really offered anything concrete to working people, you know? And that's especially true in California, where we've had a supermajority of Democrats in office, and we still see, like, so much poverty in the state, education being defunded, homelessness, and, you know, ICE raids here as well. So I think it's just people are realizing that they maybe don't actually have our best interests at heart.
And Gavin Newsom said that Israel was an apartheid state, and then he took it back, apparently.
Yeah, that's crazy. I feel like he is definitely kind of like towing the line. He doesn't want to be anti-establishment, so he's kind of like walking back on things that people actually support. So I think that just goes to show also why we need a third party, because if it's built by us for us, then, you know, it'll just be accountable to us. They won't have to be pandering to like establishment folks, you know.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
My name is Sam. I'm a Marine Corps veteran. I'm here because we are quickly going towards fascism in this country, and there's a lot of things that we signed up as veterans to defend, and it's still there, so our service doesn't end.
And it looks like we're getting involved in another war in Iran with troops, thousands of troops. What's it all for?
Money. It's what it comes down to. There's a very clear pattern. If you look at, you know, wars, pretty much of our whole country's history, if you really look at the patterns of why we go into countries, or, you know, why we're overthrowing governments, it just comes down to money. And so you've got to ask yourself, you know, am I fighting for freedom, or am I fighting for corporations?
Well, Trump is pretty honest. He says that oil belongs to us. That's why we have to go and get it. I mean, what do you think about that, the whole openness about grabbing the oil of Iran and Venezuela?
I don't think the oil belongs to us. It belongs to other countries, right?
It's in their land, isn't it?
Right, exactly. Yeah, so, you know, what are we doing over there taking it?
During the Vietnam War, there was a rebellion among GIs, and you've got thousands of GIs in ships now who are getting angry about what's going on. You think there's going to be a movement among GIs to organize?
I know them. I'm sure they're talking amongst themselves. You know, anytime something like this happens, there's always... The military contains the whole spectrum, right, of people. I feel like it's anybody, you know, there's a whole spectrum of people in this country. The only demographic that's not represented in the military is wealthy people. But everybody else is in there, so there's a lot of opinion.
And the VA, there's threats of layoffs at VA, Veterans Administration. Are you concerned about that?
The budget cuts? Oh, absolutely, yeah. We've been on a good trend with it, and now, you know, we're backsliding because of cuts, because of, you know, good people that are leaving because they have to.
Are you on the VA?
I am have the service connected disability, yes.
So you yourself are worried about the effect of these cutbacks?
Correct, yeah.
There should be a movement against the cutbacks of VA?
to get
movement against the cutbacks at VA.
Absolutely, yeah. We don't take care of our veterans enough.
What does that say, that they're cutting VA benefits?
Well, it shows you what they're really concerned about, right? What their priorities are. It's not veterans unless we're useful, you know, fighting overseas to make more money.
That's the danger, is that they'll bring the war home here on the streets, not only with the National Guard, but also there were some Marines who were in waiting to come onto the streets of, around the ice. And
so you're worried about a military occupation of San Francisco, like in Minneapolis with the ICE people?
Unfortunately, it could happen. That's what we're learning right now. Things that seemed inconceivable now are actually really a possible reality.
Okay, thank you.
That was Steve Zeltzer from his Labor Video YouTube channel. For more videos and insights from Steve Zeltzer, you can go to his Labor Video YouTube channel, or now you can find him at the Production of Labor Video Project on the web at labormedia.net.
Yes, I have billions of dollars.
Shut it down! Shut it down!
I earned it. No one gave it to me.
Shut it down!
Over the past 18 months, Starbucks has waged the most aggressive and illegal union-busting campaign in the modern history of our country.
We are tired of listening to billionaire CEOs take sole credit for the billions of dollars of profit made off our labor.
I'm getting health care through Starbucks. I can't afford my medical bills.
I qualify for food stamps because I was getting my hours cut so much.
The labor of a single barista in terms of the profit that one barista can pull in a day's worth of work is somewhere in the thousands. And that worker is walking home with maybe $100 before taxes.
The level of stress and the conditions were so bad that a union made a lot of sense.
And it was scary, but also empowering.
Within 4 days, we had 80% of the store who had signed union cards.
And the next week, I showed up at work, and there were people I'd never seen before trying to talk to me while I was at work.
Howard Schultz sends a swarm of corporate level out-of-state managers into Buffalo, New York.
They flew in from around the country to bust the union. Starbucks calls them the Buffalo SWAT team.
Anyone that you could imagine from the upper echelons of Starbucks corporate were in my store constantly.
My store, along with two other stores, filed within like weeks, and the numbers kept growing.
History made in Buffalo, New York. Starbucks workers voted to unionize. That is the first Starbucks to form a union at a company-operated store ever in America.
I was clocking in for a closing shift, and my support manager came up to me. She said, "Do you mind if we talk on the patio?" And I knew right then that I was getting fired.
They could not find a reason to fire me. They had to make something up.
They fired seven of us in one day, all within like 15 minutes apart.
They wanted to put fear in everybody's hearts about getting fired.
Really, it was just a way to chill the effect of what union we had so far.
We're 1 year in and we don't have a contract!
Ms. Eisen, why has it taken so long to reach an agreement?
We haven't reached an agreement because Starbucks doesn't want to.
We never wanted to wage war. We've been met with vitriol and retaliation.
All power to the Starbucks workers!
If you don't recognize the union, we will shut it down!
Shut it down! Shut it down!
This is Dan McCrory, executive producer of Working Voices. We have a surprise for our listeners. The award-winning documentary, Baristas vs. Billionaires, is coming to town Saturday, April 25th at 7:30 p.m. Come join us at the Lemley Monica Film Center in Santa Monica to celebrate the next generation as they take on Starbucks CEO Brian Nichol and organize for power in the workplace. In the next week or so, we'll be talking to actor-activist Alec Baldwin about the importance of getting behind this drive to organize. Again, that's Saturday, April 25th, 7:30 p.m. at the Lemley Monica Film Center in Santa Monica. Baristas versus Billionaires.
In our next offering this morning, Working Voices executive producer Dan McCrory brings us some perspective from the No Kings LA demonstration. Working class hero with something to be
here. This is Dan McCrory from Working Voices Radio on KPFK talking to
William Churchville.
And why are you here today, William?
I'm here to protest this fascist takeover of our government. And I've seen too many friends and colleagues die in tip wars to see that this Iran thing is the biggest boondoggle facing our current, our current generation. And we have to call it out for what it is. And we have to, this is a no-win situation. And we have people at the top of this country that are absolutely incompetent and incapable of performing their office, and they're below the dignity of the office, and they need to resign or be impeached. And this is sending a clear message to the world that we're not down with this.
As a veteran yourself, do you think it's more important that you're out here?
Absolutely. I think that the veterans have to speak up too, because unfortunately we were the people that have fought in wars before. And we know what war is, and the people that are currently glorifying this and making this out like it's a video game are not accurately representing what war actually does to the fabric of our society and our young people. We're going to see, if this trajectory stays the same, we're going to see a lot of young men and women coming home in body bags, and I'm not down with that either.
Thank you for your words.
You're very welcome.
This is Dan McCrory with Working Voices, okay, talking to...
My name is Cindy.
And why are you here today, Cindy?
To make good trouble.
Were you out here before?
Oh, yes.
Okay, and how's it look today?
Bigger.
Oh, my God.
Better.
Noisier?
Noisier. Yes, okay. Yes.
So what do you hope will come of this?
That the good guys still outnumber the bad guys.
Okay, right. Would you like to say something?
Sure.
Okay, and your name is?
Corey.
And why are you here today, Corey?
I'm here because it's important that we keep exercising our First Amendment rights and we continue to build community. And these events have been a really wonderful space for that.
And what do you hope comes of this?
Well, I hope more people find connection with like-minded folks. They find ways to combine their focus and their abilities. People out here are networking. There are people who maybe they can drive but they can't speak a certain language, or maybe they can go out to shops but they can't drive, and like everybody's finding ways to help each other and come together and get a whole of the pieces, and that's what we need to do here.
Excellent. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Comments.
Thank you.
Is it?
Yep, this is Dan McCrory for Working Voices Radio on KPFK, talking to folks at the turnout for No Kings Rally here in West Valley. And I'm talking to...
I'm Paul, how you doing?
Great, Paul. Why are you here today?
I'm just trying to get back to some sort of normalcy.
Do you see it happening soon?
Maybe. Maybe we'll get a little leg up in November, and then... we can turn things around. 68 or 08, 28.
Are the Democrats doing enough?
No.
Would you like to say something? What's your name?
This is Aaron.
My name is Aaron. I'm Paul's daughter.
Oh, okay. And so it's multiple generations are here today.
Yeah, my husband and son are over here too. And this is my mom and my
sister.
We've got
three generations.
Why is it important for your son to be out here?
Well, this is his future that we're trying to protect and save. I mean, first of all, I certainly don't want him to get drafted into a war in Iran. And he's 18 years old. He's the age for that. And he's in college, but like he feels like he has no hope for his future, for, whether or not there will even be jobs for him when he gets to that point. And plus my son is mixed too, and the racism is just you know, at an all-time high right now, and I'm always terrified every time he walks out the door, gets in the car, and drives down the street. I'm afraid he might get pulled over and shot, or that, you know, he'll just get discriminated against in another way. He could get discriminated against for jobs. He could get discriminated against just for being who he is. And it scares me. I want to protect my son's life, my son's future.
Well, thanks for being here. Thanks for your comments. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
And, take care. Thank you.
Our show's on Monday morning, 5 a.m., so you might want to just listen to the archives there. You can find those at kpfk.org.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
KPFK has been around for a long time.
I know.
This is Dan from KPFK talking to
Oscar McCraw and Laura McCraw.
And why are you, what brings you guys out here?
Because
we're upset. Very disgusted. Frustrated.
How's the crowd today?
It's bigger than the last several times we've been here and other places.
Okay. What do you expect to come of this?
We're hoping that the Republicans will step up and get a spine and start denouncing this guy who seems to be taking them over and kissing them.
It's needed at this time. So
yeah.
Thank you for your comments.
No problem.
Thank you.
Thanks for being here.
We need more protest songs, too.
There you go.
There we go.
Thanks. This is Dan McCrory for Working Voices. Today, March 28th, another opportunity for Americans in more than 3,100 demonstrations, 500 more than in October, across the nation to protest the actions of a president clearly not loved nor appreciated by the majority of Californians. And dare we say it, our nation. And judging by the number of protests in Europe, there either. Protesters' numbers grew at each event, 5 million in June, 7 million in October, and the number on Saturday was expected to surpass 9 million. And as in previous protests, the crowd in the West San Fernando Valley was predominantly white, with a mixture of veterans, baby boomers, and their children and grandchildren, union members, and a wide variety of clever, angry, and funny signs protesting Trump and many of his policies and at least two wars. A working class hero with something to be
here. That was Working Voices executive producer Dan McCrory with discussions from the No Kings LA demonstration. And for more perspectives from Dan McCrory, you can find them at danmccrorybooks.com. Next up, Kristen Parker from the Montebello Teachers Association brings us this latest teacher union news from United Teachers Los Angeles and LAUSD.
This is Kristen Parker of the Montebello Teachers Association with the latest union news out of the LA Unified School District. The two unions representing more than 68,000 LAUSD teachers and employees will strike starting on April 14th unless they reach an agreement with the district beforehand. The announcement was made at the Fight for LA joint rally last week with members of United Teachers Los Angeles, representing roughly 38,000 teachers, and SEIU Local 99, which represents more than 30,000 school workers, including cafeteria workers, bus drivers, and special education assistants. UTLA and SEIU Local 99 authorized a strike by 94% and 97%, respectively. Several groups, including the Coalition for Humane Immigrant Rights, Students Deserve, Inner City Struggle, and Community Coalition also voiced solidarity with the unions at the Fight for LA rally. UTLA's union leadership has long pointed to the high cost of living in the Los Angeles area and a 40% increase in inflation. Currently, 20% of UTLA members are housing insecure, according to union officials. A union social media post also said that 56% of its members have acquired credit card debt and 30% have had to work a second job. UTLA's demands include salaries that make Los Angeles livable, equitable wage increases, protections against subcontracting and the use of AI to replace jobs, smaller class sizes, increases in special education staff and counselors, and expanding physical education and the arts at all LA elementary schools. UTLA members are working under a contract that expired in June, and the union's latest proposal would lead to a 17% wage increase over the next 2 years. Under the latest proposal, early career teachers would earn $80,000. By contrast, LAUSD has proposed an 8% increase and a 3% one-time bonus over the next 2 years, according to a statement released on Wednesday. The United Teachers Los Angeles has rejected a fact-finding report as it continues to draw up a contract with the Los Angeles Unified School District. The union had set April 14th as a potential strike date. The report, issued last Monday, recommends that the 3-year agreement, which would span July 1st, 2025, through June 30th, 2028, to include the following with respect to compensation: 3% off-schedule payment effective 2025 to 2026, 8% across the board effective July 1st, 2026, 3% effective January 1st, 2028. It also recommends LAUSD's parental leave proposal, which would provide 4 weeks of leave with the ability to follow up with sick time. And it includes the district's proposed memorandum of understanding regarding use of technology to support instruction, with an added provision that bargaining unit positions would not be replaced by advanced technology. Items that aren't included in the recommendations and that haven't already been agreed to would remain status quo, the report suggests. The fact-finding report did not include an exhaustive analysis of the district's financial position, acknowledging the complexity and scope of such a review. LAUSD maintains it is committed to reaching a fair and responsible agreement with the union. Meanwhile, UTLA issued a dissent, claiming the report is dismissive of the progress made on key issues. It also expressed disappointment in the report, saying it was effectively asking UTLA to scrap all proposals that address student needs in exchange for a pay increase. The district said its current proposals for 2025 through 28 with UTLA would cost $901 million beyond what they currently spend, and the union won a 21% raise during the previous cycle. LAUSD said it met with a state mediator on February 2nd regarding bargaining with SEIU Local 99, and the proposal sent ahead of time included a 13% wage increase over 3 years. But UTLA and SEIU argue that 99% of their members are unable to afford a one-bedroom apartment in Los Angeles, arguing the district's proposal would amount to a pay cut considering current inflation rates. The negotiations and possible strike come at a turbulent time for the district, which is anticipating a $191 million deficit in the 2027 through 28 school year if it keeps spending at its current pace. And the LAUSD board voted last month in favor of a potential reduction in force that could result in roughly 650 layoffs. The union has countered the district's fiscal argument, pointing to its $5 billion in reserves. The UTLA strike doesn't come with an end date. The union last went on strike in 2019 for 6 days, which led to a historic agreement that included a 6% pay raise, investments in community schools, and smaller class sizes. 4 years later, SEIU Local 99 also went on strike and secured a 30% wage increase over 3 years. More on this story as it develops. This is Kristen Parker for KPFK's Working Voices. Finally, the tables are starting to turn. I'm talking about a revolution.
Oh, no. That was Kristen Parker with the latest UTLA and LAUSD news. For more information on the progress of current negotiations, you can go find it at utla.net.
Never get paid what our labor is worth. That's why we often in a day's on the way to our work. And when we get there, we can't wait to be out. So let me tell you what it's about.
Hi, this is Halle Berry, and you're listening to KPFK 90.7 FM.
This is Working Voices Associate Producer Hal Lohr with this morning's Working Voices Update.
We are cutting the waste and fraud in real time. So every day that passes, our goal is to reduce the waste and fraud by $4 billion a day, every day, 7 days a week.
Well, I do agree that we actually want to be careful in the cuts. They may characterize it as shooting from the hip, but it is anything but that. Which is not to say that we don't make mistakes. The success of those is only possible with President Trump and with the outstanding cabinet that he selected. It would be impossible without the support of the president and the cabinet.
And just in case you needed a Working Voices update on the latest job and economy news, all we can say here is, what a difference a year makes. You see, last year at about this time, Elon Musk was boasting that his Doge team could achieve $2 trillion in federal budget savings by paring down the federal government's workforce. Then in November, Donald Trump announced plans to send $2,000 tariff dividend checks to all Americans, not including high-income people. During his election campaign, Trump promised to cut gas and home electric bills in half. During his recent State of the Union address, Trump stated that gas was below $2.30 a gallon in most states. Yes, none of this happened. What's worse, the arrow on cost charts of U.S. economic activity are pointing down as gas prices rise and food prices soar. But for working people, the most notable blow to Trump's narrative of ever-strengthening economy was delivered by the Bureau of Labor Statistics on Friday when it reported that non-farm payrolls had fallen by a startling 92,000 jobs in February. And forecasts of U.S. gross domestic product in the quarter that ended March 31st reflect a high level of economic distress, though they don't currently point to a recession. Economists who had kept an eye on job data all year detected an appreciable weakening in employment ever since Trump announced his Liberation Day tariffs on April 2nd, even as falling employment levels had confounded the Trump administration's narrative. Indeed, overall job growth disappeared during 2025, with non-farm civilian employment falling by 230,000 jobs from January 2025 through last month, and by 571,000 from April 2024, when Trump announced the liberation tariffs through last month. Jobs in manufacturing, which Trump specifically promised would benefit from his tariff regime, also fell by 100,000 jobs since he took office, with 89,000 of those jobs lost since April. As for the administration's promise that mass deportations of immigrants would yield gains of native-born workers, that hasn't happened either. Meanwhile, the employment opportunities provided by healthcare and government jobs have been chopped away. And since October, the federal workforce has declined by 231,000. State employment has fallen by 17,000, and healthcare and private education jobs by 18,000. And the promise of more and better jobs isn't the only promise that Trump has broken. In 2025, Musk reduced his goal of federal budget savings from $2 trillion to $1 trillion. But again, not even close. Doge currently estimates the savings from his rampage through the government rolls at $215 billion, but all experts view the results as ultimately destructive to U.S. economics as a whole. So where does all this leave us? Economic predictions are always dynamic, but stagnant employment has become a drag on the economy for at least the middle term, leaving the economic picture for the U.S. job market noticeably dark. As for predicting the future, for the moment, a magic eight ball had as useful a range of replies as any current economic forecaster with an advanced degree in economics. Ask it whether the economy will improve in the coming months, and its answers will range from yes, definitely, to don't count on it. But as long as the U.S. economy and job market remains in the hands of Donald Trump, the most accurate reply for most working people is probably ask again later.
LAUSD moves to strip the Cesar Chavez name from two campuses and change focus of holiday. This is Sean Forbes, and in the latest move developing from ongoing Cesar Chavez revelations, officials are moving on Tuesday to strip the name of Cesar Chavez from two Los Angeles school district campuses as fallout continues over allegations against the late labor leader of rape and sexual misconduct with minors. A resolution to rename the schools will be considered on an emergency basis at an LA Board of Education meeting that was scheduled as a board retreat to discuss an update to the district's strategic plan. The schools in question are Cesar Chavez Learning Academies in San Fernando and Cesar Chavez Elementary School in El Sereno. The board action would be one more step by a public agency to remove the Chavez name and also shift from lionizing Chavez to honoring instead the farm workers movement, and in some cases raising up the names of his alleged victims. The resolution would move the district from honoring Chavez to celebrating farm workers as the Board of Education continues to celebrate the achievements of the farm workers movement that are the result of collective labor action and remain a testament to the power of the people to demand dignity, respect, and progress for workers' rights and human rights. The resolution also considers the possibility that allegations against Chavez could trigger mental health issues for survivors of sexual assault. Under the resolution, the district would ensure resources and counseling are made available to survivors of sexual violence within the LA school communities. The allegations surfaced during Women's History Month, which, like the Cesar Chavez holiday, is a focus of school instruction at this time of the year. So the resolution also talks of strengthening age-appropriate, culturally responsive instruction on consent, healthy relationships, and recognizing abuse. In addition, the resolution speaks of continuing efforts already in progress to align instructional resources to the collective farm workers movement rather than the history of one individual. A move designed to replace the study of Cesar Chavez, the individual which for years had been deeply embedded in California curriculums and teacher lesson plans. This is Sean Forbes with this Working Voices update.
At the state capitol work through dozens of bills related to AI. One bill seeks to prohibit the use of worker data to train AI tools if the goal is to eventually automate that job. Another would require employers to disclose when AI is used in the workplace. Those bills are facing big financial pushback now from big tech. According to CalMatters, major tech-related companies spent more than $39 million to influence state politics last year. And Governor Newsom vetoed multiple bills last session that aimed to regulate AI companies, saying he didn't want to stifle the use and innovation of the technology. It's not clear yet if he would sign any AI-focused bills passed in this current session.
This in from Sacramento. Tech giants are spending more than ever to shape California politics. As California gears up for high-stakes elections this year, including an open governor's race, major companies focused on artificial intelligence and cryptocurrency are investing more than $39 million to influence state politics in 2026, according to a CalMatters analysis. The companies contributed that money to political campaigns, hired lobbyists to influence policy, and donated to nonprofit organizations at the request of lawmakers. In all cases, critics say the companies use their money to build relationships that give them outsized influence over California's legislative process. And the companies themselves openly say that they're supporting candidates and policies who align with their corporate priorities. Last July, Meta, which made $201 billion in revenue last year, transferred $20 million to a new political action committee it created with the goal of supporting candidates in favor of fewer AI regulations. Then a month later, the company gave the California Democratic Party $150,000 and a bipartisan group of 20 incumbents in the California legislature up to $5,900 each. Later on, Meta sent a statement saying the money is to help elect state political candidates in California, no matter their party affiliation, that support and defend the American tech industry. The parent company of social media apps Facebook, WhatsApp, and Instagram spent nearly $30 million last year to influence politics in California. Part of that effort included contributions worth more than $25 million to 44 committees, and the fight about whether to regulate artificial intelligence or how it should be done doesn't seem to be going away in this election year. Since the current legislative session began, more than 50 bills that regulate AI are being considered according to the Digital Democracy Database, and federal legislative gridlock and President Donald Trump's hostile stance toward AI regulation means that California, where Democrats have a supermajority in the legislature, is one place where such regulations may actually happen. But Meta isn't the only company spending on possible AI legislation. Google, whose parent company Alphabet, $403 billion in revenue in 2025, spent more than $3.5 million on lobbying related to technology budget funding and generative artificial intelligence last year to defeat AI regulations and to build a fund journalism. OpenAI, the creator of ChatGPT, started lobbying California officials for the first time in 2024 when it spent nearly $140,000. Meanwhile, Anthropic, maker of the popular large language model Claude, spent more than $200,000 to lobby state representatives last year, the first year it reported such expenses. Meanwhile, as well-known AI companies have been ramping up their spending in recent years, a new tech player is also buying influence across the state, the cryptocurrency industry. 2 years ago, a cryptocurrency super PAC spent $10 million on ads against Democrat Katie Porter in the U.S. Senate primary. Last year, venture capital funds with financial stakes in cryptocurrency companies spent a record amount on state lobbying at about $500,000 combined. And recently, two crypto-aligned billionaires made clear that they plan to spend tens of millions of dollars in California state politics, putting tech at the top of the Money for Influence leaderboard alongside the oil and gas industry, which historically has been one of the largest political lobby spenders. Last year, fossil fuel companies spent almost $34 million lobbying in California, according to an analysis from Politico, and $5.3 million in campaign contributions, according to a CalMatters analysis. And just in case that were not enough to make working-class voters question what is happening in the halls of the California State House, since January, wealthy Silicon Valley investors have already put millions of dollars into fighting California's proposed wealth tax initiative, even as outgoing Governor Gavin Newsom openly opposes the bill and would likely veto the bill if it ever crosses his desk. And that's our show for this week. Once again, we're asking our labor partners, locals, and regional officers to seriously consider underwriting this show, because Working Voices and KPFK could really use your support. So please, contact the station at 818-985-5735 or go to kpfk.org to explore the possibilities. We need to hear from you. You can also email your comments or questions to workingvoices@aol.com. Please contribute if you can at 818-985-5735. This is Hal Lohr, sitting in for Joe Ayala, with our thanks to Steve Zeltzer, Enrique Sanchez, Dan McCrory, Gary Scott, Kristen Parker, Sean Forbes, and all our guests. Please continue to give what you can to keep us going. We're all in this together. And of course, always remember to educate, agitate, and organize.
Got so much work, yeah, yeah. Work, work, yeah. Work, work.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. Starting Monday, April 6th, KPFK will be adding a second hour of the Tom Hartman program. So instead of 9 to 10 a.m., we'll be on 9 to 11 a.m. Monday through Thursday right here on KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles
and online for the world at kpfk.org. Again, that's the Tom Hartman Program on KPFK, Monday through Thursday, 9 to 11 a.m. Talk with you then. Tag, you're it.
Give a gift to KPFK and yourself when you let us take your unwanted vehicle off your hands. Not only will your donation help support the on-air programs our community relies on every day, but you even qualify for a tax deduction. Go to kpfk.org/cars or call 877-573-5288. That's 1-877-KPFK-AUTO to learn more.